This is the Change Management Podcast by the University of South Wales. My name's Dr. Louise Bright, and I'm joined by Victoria Hall today. In this episode, we'll be discussing the role of management in change. So we know that people can get promoted into management positions without necessarily having the fundamental knowledge and experience to be really effective at driving change. In this episode, we explore why this happens. We'll be discussing techniques to help managers cope with the extra responsibility, and we'll look at driving real change and how understanding human behaviour, motivation and performance can influence this. Victoria, I often talk to experts in this podcast series who have really interesting and varied backgrounds, and you're no exception. So you've had a career that's moved from the RAF, where you led teams in the UK and abroad, then as a solicitor and also as a HR professional. It sounds like a fascinating career so far. You now work with leaders and managers in a wide range of different organisations, from global banks right the way through to charities. I'm wondering whether you do see this challenge, you know, of managers being thrust into this role without being well equipped. You know, is that something that you've experienced in your practice?
Yes, it is. It's a real challenge, because even across all the different sectors and industries that I work within, people are still generally promoted on technical skill as opposed to what we might call management skill, and aren't necessarily given the developmental training they need to get on top of the skill sets they need to be able to work with their teams effectively. Yet at the same time, they're being demanded to make change and to lead and to do all the other things we expect from managers. So it's a really confusing and stressful time for managers when they are promoted or when they're in a new role. And, you know, we've got all these sayings like driving change through people, or good management now means being human. But you can't do that if you don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you need to have the confidence to do it, so we can have all the right courses in place, so we can have all the right learning strategies. But it's a contradiction if it's not also reflected in the company strategy. We need to tie in what being a good manager means and what results we expect from that with company strategy. Most of the managers I work with aren't scared of the technical aspects of their job. It really is the people element of the role where they're getting stuck. And it's really that area that needs development. We want to get real lasting change when we talk about driving change, not fake change, as I call it. We want to see long-term results. And neuroscience has enhanced our understanding of what motivates people. And personal change has to start with the individual. It can't start anywhere else. We need to engage managers in true personal development, because without it, there is no change. And what I find is once you change, others around you change as well. And to invest in real personal change, we have to understand how we work as human beings, hence the neuroscience element. Without that knowledge, we can't truly understand our behaviours. For example, we're emotionally driven beings with a strong energetic present. We're not thought driven as we previously thought we were. If we don't understand that, then when we look at our own behaviours, we're starting from completely the wrong perspective. So it's really important that we do get some knowledge around neuroscience to help us understand ourselves, so we can go on and help others. Implementing theories in just a rational way won't work. And unfortunately, this is unfamiliar territory for managers. And when they're out of their depth or they feel scared, they fall back on old behaviours or hierarchy in order to get by. And that's not their fault. They're just surviving best they can in their roles. But what they're not doing is what the subject of this podcast is, which is driving change. To drive change, we really have to look at self-development and make sense of ourselves first.
Interested in learning about driving organisational change? Search for the USW Changemaker Programme.
Can I pick you up on that self-development piece? I mean, I quite often observe leaders and managers who are in fairly senior positions, and I think, as you say, have found themselves there, you know, because of their particular expertise, not necessarily because they're very skilled leaders or managers, but they're almost so senior that they can't admit maybe not to themselves, but certainly not to the organisation, that they might need some development or self-reflection. So that's I think, is a real barrier and challenge. Is that something that you've come across? And if it is, how do we tackle that?
Yeah, that is a really important point, because a lot of what we do is driven through fear of what people will think of us, fear of our own trust in our competence, and our behaviours match those fears. I remember years ago, I asked for coaching for one of the organisations I was working with because I wanted to better myself. That was taken as me not being able to do my job effectively. Coaching's moved on since then, and it's more well known about. But at the time, it wasn't so common. But that kind of attitude is something that will help people stay stuck, because someone who's brave enough to say, I want to do the best I can here, and in order to do that, I want to invest some time in learning about myself, how I work, how I can then have a better impact and influence on others, should be applauded and not put in a box where it might suggest this person needs development work or this person needs help to do their job. Because, and unfortunately, our use of the English language as well doesn't help, because certain words have connotations that aren't helpful. So, you know, I'll probably talk at some point in this podcast about the fact that we're emotionally driven human beings. Now, the word emotional doesn't have great connotations in our language. It suggests, you know, images that aren't particularly helpful to managers wanting to say, I understand that I'm emotionally driven and I want to work on that. Just like the word grievance doesn't have the right connotations in an employment law context. You know, a grievance was supposed to be a helpful way to solve informal disputes, but it's certainly not seen like that in practice. So we need to help, I suppose, organisations allow people to ask for development and help without hindering them from doing that by making them feel like it's a weakness or something that they should not be proud of. Because actually, the people who are prepared to invest in their own self-development are the courageous ones, and they're the ones that will succeed, and they're the ones that we should be proud of.
So really, what you're kind of turning it on its head, isn't it, that development isn't, we shouldn't think of that as exposing a weakness. We should think of wanting to develop continually as a particular strength in an individual.
Yes, I think it's the key strength to people management.
Yeah. And there's something there for me, if you are in that management leadership position and you're putting your hand up and being very open and honest about, you know, the development activities that you're undertaking and, you know, your reflection on your learning, that's quite good role modelling, isn't it, for the rest of your team then to kind of follow suit?
Absolutely. And role modelling is so important, because a lot of the people who are learning this new way of working aren't at the top of the tree yet. If there is a top of a tree in the future organisations, as they will be, because, you know, there's a big movement to remove hierarchy and have more flat structures. But they tend to, at the moment, be the sort of middle managers, or certainly not the top anyway. So they need to be the role models for the future generations, I suppose. But some, you know, often it will be without having that understanding from further up the chain. Now, I wouldn't say they don't necessarily get support, because there's a huge amount of investment in courses and learning and development. The problem with all of that is it's theory. And if they don't see it in practice, they can't really learn from it. Mm. So role models may support in the sense that there's a budget for learning and development, or there's a budget to go on an emotional intelligence course or something like that. But unless they're actually living those practices themselves, then they're not being able to role model that to anybody else. And so it is, I suppose, for those lower down, perhaps, to take the initiative to do this for themselves.
So is there anything else you think that managers can do to develop themselves so that they are more effective?
I think they can do a few things, just to pick out a couple. So first and foremost, it is really to commit to this self-discovery process, whatever that means to the individual, whether that's supported through the company or whether they have to go off and do this for themselves. Understanding themselves will be the key to moving on and being able to develop themselves as a team player, and to get the best out of the people around them. The other thing that they could really concentrate on is building trust And when I say building trust, I mean collective trust. We talk about psychological safety in organisations quite a lot. I don't personally use that term. I think the word trust is enough, really. Mm. I mean, we all have a sense of what that feels like at home or at work. It just can be a little bit harder to define it. But collective trust means that the manager themselves and the people working around them can operate in an environment where they're not in survival mode. Because when we're in survival mode, we can't be at our best. We can't perform. The best we can hope for from people is compliance, really. What managers want to aim for is to create an environment of trust where people can thrive, where they see an opportunity to do something better, to be the best they can be. And to do that, they need to be able to take risks. They need to be able to try things out. They need to be able to fail and learn. And they're not going to do that unless they're in an environment that they trust. And collective trust is a much nicer place to be than having to do all of this work on your own. You know, you can go on and develop yourself as much as you like and trust in your own outcomes. But if you can do this as a team, that's even better, because we like being part of something. So building collective trust and learning new ways and techniques and methods of doing that, I think would be really helpful for managers.
And I suppose in, you know, this podcast comes about because of the COVID pandemic, when so many people are working, you know, in a remote way. So, you know, we're with our teams online, but we're not really with our teams physically as we used to be. How do we maintain trust in this virtual environment, or for some of us, even, you know, sort of develop those trusting relationships when, you know, we don't have that physical contact? You can't see those nuances in, you know, what a facial expression is doing or how your body is reacting. Is this an added challenge for managers and leaders?
It's definitely an added challenge in the sense that we are energetically driven beings. So when, for example, someone walks in the room, you can sense what's going on in that environment, because we give off energy that tells us whether this is something dangerous or something positive, or this person's okay or not. And, you know, we respond to that. So you don't have that remotely. You can't actually physically pick up on the energy of other people around you because you're too far away from them. So, you know, there's nothing we can do about that at the moment, in to the extent that we are all working from home. So I suppose it goes to the point of acceptance, really. That isn't an option. So let's move on from that and look at what we can do. There are lots of, you know, nonverbal and verbal communication skills we can still use to help others trust us and to know that we're doing the right thing. But I think that's where the key is. It's action, really. To maintain trust, people just need to know that other people are doing the right thing by them, and they will know the parameters that people are working within. So I don't think that home working should really affect trust to any significant degree, because most of a manager's actions or processes should be implementable from home. They just can't get the energy part of it, but they can do other things that would still allow that to continue.
So we've talked a lot about personal development of managers and leaders, and it sounds to me like this isn't going on a course and then being fully equipped to lead and manage. It sounds like this is an ongoing journey and something where individuals are constantly learning. How do you think managers can build resilience? And do you think that that's an essential leadership skill?
Yes, I do think resilience is an essential skill personally and in a work context. And you do need to be resilient in order to go through a journey of personal change, more so if you're doing it on your own than perhaps if you're doing it collectively as a group. But you need resilience, you know, nonetheless. I mean, all we are as human beings really is energy management systems. So if we run out of fuel, we run out of fuel just like a car, really. We need to keep our energy levels topped up. And that's really the basis of the subject, resilience. How do we manage our energy? Because when we go through a learning experience like personal change, we're going to find out lots of things that we like about ourselves, lots of things we don't like about ourselves, lots of things that we're going to find hard to implement even though we want to, lots of things that others around us may resist that we are going to have to trust ourselves on in order to continue doing them, you know, certain behaviors or whatever, different way of working, whatever it is. And these things are stressful. And what we're also doing is going against the grain. You know, our brain's already programmed to work one way. We're now asking it to do something different. That takes up energy. So we need to be resilient to keep going. And one of the key aspects of resilience that I think is overlooked quite a lot is belief. So you have physical aspects to resilience. You can have intelligent aspects to resilience and emotional well-being. But belief is a key element which can really help. Because if you believe in what you're doing, your energy is channeled in the right way to help you. So when we do something we don't believe in, we really have to fight ourselves in a way to do it. But when we do something we do believe in, our bodies will and brains will go with us. So helping managers find a way to believe in their change, to believe in what they're doing, and to help others see that belief, I think would be key to helping them keep their resilience where it needs to be effective and to keep themselves well.
Finally, Victoria, if you could advise organisations to do one thing to help their managers deliver change, what would it be?
I think I might mention two. But the first, I suppose, is that do we really need organisational models based on hierarchy anymore? Is that going to get the best out of people in the future? I mean, everything we've talked about today is all around people taking responsibility for themselves and working effectively together as teams or communities. Hierarchy goes against that. You know, we will need rules and structures in place, but the way we use hierarchy at the moment doesn't tend to help people. It just tends to box them into roles or responsibilities and doesn't allow them to be free to really perform to the best of their ability. There's a model that we use called the podium model, and it has three layers to it. The top is having your values and vision. The second is having your relationships, and that's where, you know, you get your trust. And the third layer, the last layer, is the machinery. How does it work in practice? What are the rules and regulations? The first two are around people and how we get the best out of them. Then you put the layers in to assure that, you know, the actual organisation can work and run as it needs to. It's almost the opposite to what we do at the moment, which is to put all the rules and structures in place and then superimpose everything else on top. So I would say, let's move away from hierarchy and get people fully engaged in the business that they work for and doing the best they can. I think the other thing that I just would like to add is that I'd love to remove judgment from management or ways of working, because I don't believe there's any right or wrong in anything. People are just taking a decision or doing their best in the situation that they're in. If we can remove judgment, then we can remove some of the barriers to people trying new things. And I think that would be really helpful, because we spend a lot of time worrying about, is this the right thing to do? Is this the wrong thing to do? Am I going to get told off for this? Is this going to backfire on me? We just need to give people the confidence to get out there and to do the best.
I think that last sentiment about judgment is really powerful. Thank you, Victoria, for being a great guest, and thank you for listening. If you want to hear more of the Change Management Podcast, please don't forget to subscribe. And to find out more about this podcast and our business services at the University of South Wales, please visit southwales.ac.uk/business.